The views of Ken and Eric are not the views of Chariot Solutions itself. Also, as a standard disclaimer, we have a number of partners we mentioned in the show. SpringSource of VMware, JBoss of Division Red Hat, and Engine Yard. Enjoy the show. Chariot Developer News, for number 15 for Monday, May 10th, 2010. I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And we're here to talk about tech stuff we think is cool. Bookmarks are available at delicious.com/developer news/15. You can always check out our show notes page at techcast.chariotsolutions.com. So we got a number of items. We've been bookmarking things, but we've just been so darn busy with our regular day jobs that we haven't actually gone out and done a developer news in a couple weeks. We're not going to hit all of the ones in our bookmark list, but we'll go through some of the ones we think are the best. So we were just talking, we were just getting started, Eric and I, about templates and coding support. One of our news items is about Zen Coding. Zen Coding is a project that makes it easy to expand, I guess, macros for HTML and CSS. And so the Zen Coding project, I guess it's out on, where is it, SourceForge? Google.com. And the number of things they have on download, they've got a ton of different IDEs that they support. And you just type these little tiny fragments of your HTML and it expands it out. Same thing with your CSS and expands it out. So the actual project is at code.google.com/p/zen-coding. So I mean, the whole thing is, it's complicated enough, isn't it?
I kind of have a negative reaction to this kind of thing. Not for a good reason. I mean, you know, people that are masters of a particular IDE, they're just amazing. They can accomplish so much more in the same amount of time than I can. Mm-hmm. But I can't retain all of the hotkeys to start these macros or remember the macros themselves. You know, I can remember maybe a 5 or 6, you know, ones that I use the most. So I'm very jealous of people that can develop this way. So in my mind, you know, I justify it by saying, well, if you can't do it in plain old VI, there's no point. So
right.
To be honest with you, this looks pretty cool. It's just, it's not going to work for me, I don't think.
Well, because I'll read out one. So right on the homepage is Zen Coding. They've got this, if you type div:\page left, you know, bracket, whatever, div.logo+ul:\navigation, li*5(A), and hit tab. If I can remember all that, it spits out a div with another div inside of it with a unordered list with 5 items.
Right. If you spend enough time with it.
Cool.
No, I think there's a pattern that evolves.
Yeah,
comes
there
out
is.
Of it, emerges, and you start to get used to it, and it makes more sense. And you can anticipate how these things work. But
I mean, I guess the good thing is if you look at the list of the different IDEs it plugs into, you got TextMate, which is one of my favorites. If you're an ultra edit weenie on Windows, you got those. No offense, weenies. And Aptana, Coda, NetBeans, IntelliJ. I'm not sure if they have one for Eclipse. I didn't see one there. So I suppose if you flip between IDEs and you want like a cross IDE macro expander.
That's very cool, yeah.
I mean, Mac people should look at Text Expander. That's another one that's out there.
Right.
That's more generic and it'll work in Word and anything else where there's input. But this is just kind of a little bit – it's interesting, worth noting, and I guess it's mostly worth noting because they put out the IntelliJ plugin for it. Mm-hmm. So that is one item. Eric, you have a couple new ones. I think you do.
I have one old new one.
That's okay. It works for me.
A couple new ones. So this actually is an article that's kind of old. It's from, say, October 2008. But for some reason, it ended up in Google Reader as a new post. So somebody just relinked to it. But I took a look at it, and I think I've seen it before, but it's just so useful. So if you're new to Ruby on Rails, or even if you're not, you may get confused because there's 4 different types of equality comparators. So
that puts Java to shame.
Yeah, it does. And I'm not saying they're all necessary, but
right.
It gets a little confusing. So just like, you know, a lot of languages, there's a difference between identity and true comparison. So in this article from probablyinteractive.com, you know, it gives the usual description of equal, which is a, you know, comparison operator, equal question mark, which really compares the object IDs, which is basically an identity comparison. And then there's equal question mark, which is the same as equal, but it's more strict. So, for example, 1.0 would compare as false for EQL question mark as opposed to equal equal.
So it doesn't convert them to a common type first.
Exactly, yeah. So, cool. And honestly, I forgot all about that one. I never really use it. But and then there's the famous threequel operator, which is equal equal equal, which is used in Ruby in case statements. So it's got some – I'm not going to go into it, but there's a whole lot of sort of magic behind it. And for example, in a case statement, you can compare a number to see if it's in a range. So instead of checking to see if the number's in the range, you could do, you know, range, like paren 0, dot, dot, 5, parens, threequel, you know, 2, and it would return true.
I love the threequel concept. That's great. We need fourquel.
Yeah. Well, there's a splat. There's a spaceship operator. I mean, there's all kinds of these funky operators.
Groovy has Elvis, which is the colon equals thing.
Oh, Elvis. Why? Yes. Why is that called Elvis?
I have no idea.
Interesting.
I wish I had a good answer for that, but I think it kind of looks like a, you know, the little eyes and the nose. I don't know.
And it's also worth noting, you know, if you're new to Ruby, that these operators are just methods.
Really. Mm-hmm. Right. You could override them, do what you want with them.
Yeah, they're just mixed in like anything else.
Gotcha. All right. Well, speaking of new things, or new to you, I suppose, NetBeans has, in the newest release, they've got a full Java EE 6 implementation, I guess part of Glassfish as well. And there's a nice little blog entry on netbeans.org. I'm not sure how recent this is either, but it was contributed by Andy Gibson. And it's a section called Getting Started with Container Dependency Injection in JSF2. So if you're like a fair number of us, you're a Spring developer, but you probably haven't paid much attention to Java EE, in the past couple of years, they've tried to make a leap to try to get to the point where they're doing a lot of the same.
If you're in this world, it's very cool. I had a friend mention to me once that this actually makes JSF almost usable.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
well, that was the Web Framework Shootout, right?
Yeah,
we had that, and that's one to listen to if you haven't listened to it yet. The recent Web Framework Shootout from the ETE sessions, but you know, the Java EE folks are getting to the point now where they're doing some of the developer, you know, simplicity that the Spring folks are doing, but in the container.
Simplicity is a relative term.
It is a relative term.
Yes.
And so one of the things was, I think one of the comments made by one of the guys, and I'd be careful here because I know these guys a little bit, but it was basically you don't have to download any dependent jars. And the Spring Source guy said, is that it?
Yeah.
It's like, if I don't have to download a jar. And then the Ruby guy said, well, we don't have this problem in Ruby. And I thought, wrong, you have gems. And they have their own weirdness too. So there's no free lunch, but they are different. You know, they're just different amounts of configuration and different amounts of convention. Besides the whole nesting inside of tags that are hidden from you so you don't have to code, which, by the way, goes right back to our macro expander, right?
Yeah.
HTML is sufficiently verbose.
Right.
That something that wraps the tag sounds like a good idea. But the minute those tags that wrap things don't give you what you want.
Well, we could have a whole show on this.
We really could.
I mean, my main objection to JSF is not necessarily the concept. I mean, the whole idea of a component-based architecture can be appealing. You know, it's not necessarily a bad
idea. And there are other ones like Wicket.
Sure. And Tapestry is still around, right?
Yeah. I think it's kicking around.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just that there's a level of abstraction that I think isn't necessary and causes more problems than it actually solves. So, you know, the web is all about stateless requests. And, you know, I talked to David Geary once years ago when JSF was
the
like
big
in
JSF
its
promoter. Yeah.
And he said the whole idea originally was swing over the web.
Mm-hmm.
That does not sound like a good idea to me.
Because you're thinking stateful. And
exactly.
Necessarily, as you said, stateless is
right.
The web.
So it attempts to abstract the whole thing from you, which, you know, it does in the simplest case. But once you run into, you know, some edge cases, it's just –
Yeah, and I think that's been the problem that people have complained the most about with these component-based libraries in general.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So anyway, so going all the way back,
yeah.
You know, you look at the macro stuff we were talking about. Okay, that's one angle. Is just, yeah, I know I have certain tags and patterns, but I want to live in HTML and CSS because that's as close to what the browser is going to deal with as possible.
Exactly.
And you're more engineering than you are abstracting.
Exactly.
And I'm okay with that. And then there's the other side of it, which is Java EE 6 says, yeah, we'll deal with all that for you. So here's the other extreme, right?
Right. So the other extreme is, okay, you know, so many years ago, Ajax comes around. Okay, JSF, how do you deal with that? You know, well,
find a component library that does it for me.
Exactly.
Which is what people will do. Yeah.
Right, and they all work a different way because they're trying to hide the fact that you're making an asynchronous request response.
Right.
Which is just crazy.
But so this getting back to the example, you can do this in 10 lines of code, right? That famous thing. But they go through and they show you, you know, build a facelet, a front end page, build an EJB, expose the EJB, say, I guess it's a stateless EJB, And in a couple lines of code, you have a basic interface.
That's very cool.
If you're into Java EE6, if you want to see what it is, just compare it to Spring and compare it to Seam and all the other stuff that's out there.
Yep.
It's worth paying attention to as a Java developer because just you'll know where Oracle is going at this point.
No, absolutely, yeah.
And also, if you look at there's two movements right now, at least in the Java EE world, right, or what used to be called the Java EE world is the whole staying with the JSRs mm-hmm. and what Spring Source is doing because they really do different things.
Right.
So it's worth paying attention to that. So that's at netbeans.org. And yeah, it was a good discussion because generally that's the whole pivot point on Java web frameworks is do you compose and hide the lower level elements or do you embrace lower level elements and maybe even use a jQuery, which is kind of like a halfway solution, right?
Yeah.
jQuery is abstracting a little bit of the Ajax stuff in general and manipulating the DOM, but you're still in JavaScript, so you do as little or as much of it as you want.
Yeah, but it's still pretty close to the metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not abstracted away from you all of a sudden. You can't do anything. Yeah.
Well, if you're talking about like the jQuery widget library, that's a different thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But jQuery, the API.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple Spring Source announcements. Spring Source did a couple purchases recently. They bought RabbitMQ, which is, I guess, a cloud messaging solution. They just bought Gemstone, which is a cloud data NoSQL kind of platform.
I can't keep up.
I know. There's a lot of them going on. And then the other thing they did recently is they just released Webflow 2.1.0 Milestone 1. So it looks like what they're doing there is they're upgrading to Spring Security 3.302, updated version of Tiles. The portlet API has been upgraded. And the main feature of Spring Webflow 2 is the Spring EL support. Which Spring EL, as a side discussion, is putting the Spring Expression Language into places you can evaluate things like annotations or scripts.
So Webflow didn't have that until now?
No, Webflow didn't really have the Spring EL, which is kind of a Spring 3.0 feature.
Right, right.
So Spring EL, you can basically say...
this is the unified EL they use for everything.
Well,
for-
it's a little more than that. So unified EL is one thing, but right. Spring EL, and there's a whole... piece of this on the Spring documentation on the website, but what they do is they actually expose all the Spring beans directly for you.
Right, right.
So you can do things like that. You can look up a bean, call a method, do an evaluation. Gotcha. And they put it in things like, for example, maybe you have an annotation for security saying normally it's in this role.
Right.
Well, you could actually do a little chunk inside that @secure that says this evaluation.
Gotcha.
You know, that's a push-pull too because you know, you're putting configuration in annotations, which is a string that doesn't get tested till it gets physically exercised. There's no compile time safety versus the flexibility of it. So I like to tell everyone in Spring, like what Dimitri does, it depends.
I'm not big on compile time safety.
Yeah. Well, your runtime language thing, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it depends on what your developers are looking for. But anyway, so those are a bunch of things that are going on Spring Source. You can look at Spring Source's blog to get that information. Do you want to take on another one?
Yeah, sure. I came across this all ends up in Google Reader, and not,
of course,
it's hard like to keep track of where these things coming from. But I think this came off of PyPI, the Python Package Index, PyPI.
Okay.
Python.org. So there's a new lightweight – I'll just read the marketing blurb. Lightweight, high-level message passing library supporting actor-based concurrency. So here's another one. You could throw it on the pile, right? But
yeah.
It's PySAGE.
Like and PySAGE?
PySAGE, mm-hmm. Right? PySAGE. I guess that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I suppose.
And, you know, basically it's just another implementation of the actor model. It's got a couple of nice features. It supports actor partitioning and grouping.
I like grouping. That's a new term.
It's has a very simple high level interface. So basically, messages are serialized and sent lightweight using pipes or sockets across groups. So you can have group actors into processes, for example,
mm-hmm.
and take them up and down as you need. And I think by default it uses UDP to send messages across. So, you know, it's just another one of these, but it just seems to be really simple and kind of nice.
Very cool. So that's PySAGE, huh?
PySAGE, yep.
Interesting. Okay. Let's see. What else do we have here? So this is one that I like your quote for the Apple Insider thing on HTML5 and IE. It's about time, right? Welcome to the party.
Welcome to the party, yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we haven't heard anything from Microsoft at all.
It's not like they're, you know, just being nice to us all of a sudden. They realize that they are losing the mobile market at this point. I mean, you know, everything's WebKit. except for obviously their devices.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And Opera, right? Isn't Opera not WebKit?
I don't
know. Some other one isn't yet.
I'm
probably wrong there. But anyway, yeah. So, right. It's but basically, they're out of the picture.
Well, Mozilla obviously is not WebKit. But, I mean, device-wise, right. You know, WebKit is taking over. And it's got excellent support for – or will have excellent support for HTML5, CSS3, you know. And then moving
now,
on.
Now, to be clear, WebKit is the open source version of the browser internals that Safari is using, and it was contributed originally by Apple, right?
Right. So Safari is one of the WebKit browsers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So is Chrome.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these mobile devices. So, you know, we're not going to get into this whole HTML5 discussion. We could be here all day. But
we could.
But really, it is the future of development. So Microsoft's finally realizing that they need to catch up.
So IE9 will support a couple things. He actually said it will support this is – who said this? Dean Hammock. I'm not going to say this right. Dean H., General Manager of Microsoft's Internet Team, IE Team. He said it's going to support H.264 hardware acceleration for video, which is a big thing because that's
Huge.
Yeah, it's battery life on the device.
That's another blow against Flash, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once HTML5 hardware accelerated video gets everywhere.
You don't need Flash for it anymore.
Yeah. You don't need Flash for it anymore. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's one of the reasons Steve Jobs went on his rant last week is that, you know, you can have – sure, let's put Flash video on our devices, but then watch them melt because there's no hardware acceleration.
Yeah. Right, exactly. It's all CPU clock time.
It is.
Yeah, right. And so Flash is then really relegated to games and other things and other client server apps and Flex, that kind of thing. So,
exactly.
It seems like the industry's lining up behind him and saying, yes, an open source standard with WebKit-type browsers is the future of the web in general. Pull things out of a player technology.
Yeah, but the absence – I mean, this is a tangent, but the absence of Flash on the iPad is driving me nuts at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have the same problem.
ESPN3.com is all Flash. That's all I got to say.
Can't watch Hulu.
I can't watch Australian rules football.
I know. Life is hard. Life is very hard lately. All right. Yep. So there we go. So HTML5 and H.264 encoding. And if anyone – doesn't know anything about HTML5, look at the box layout in CSS.
Right.
So I'm going to plug that again because I looked at that a couple weeks ago, and man, is that a lot easier. And when we all get to HTML5 someday, your web user interface CSS is going to be a lot cleaner.
But the good thing is we kind of are getting –
With mobile,
it's almost a clean start.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, smartphones, obviously, they're not new. They've, you know, but the explosion of smartphones is happening at the same time as the explosion of HTML5.
Right. And I know that we're holding up our iPads doing some of the show on our iPads today.
Right. And you know,
right,
you get your new smartphones regularly. It's not like you're going to keep the same version. Like, you know, we still have a lot of our clients using IE6, for God's sake. So,
yeah.
You know, that's not going to happen with these mobile devices.
But it's fascinating to look at now versus the late 90s, early 00s, whatever. What was you had WAP, right? And it was textual only. And that was the old, you know, like consumer device development and app development was really boring from that perspective.
It was.
Because you had to deal with these really character-based interfaces. You know, because anything you're doing for consumer now is going to be on these rich devices.
Right.
So it's an interesting little flip in the industry. Yep. All right. What about Redcar? What is Redcar?
I just found this yesterday. I'm sure a lot of people know about it. Somehow I didn't find out about it. But you know, it's just a Ruby IDE that's delivered as a gem. So you just do it's actually a JRuby gem.
Is it?
I think it's a JRuby
gem. As I start typing this.
I mean, it runs – I think you have to – you either have to install it as a JRuby gem or it's a regular gem that runs and installs itself in a Java heap. So it's something like that. So basically, I can kind of say it's kind of like TextMate really, but – TextMate is kind of in this development. I don't know what state it's at.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of out there.
TextMate 3
much.
Has been pending forever.
Forever. Yeah.
I know. So, it's supposed to be TextMate compatible. So I think if you have bundles, the goal is for the existing bundles to work with this. Now it's very much alpha or beta, I would say.
Uh-huh.
Probably more like alpha. There's a lot of things that just don't work at this point. But visually, it looks like TextMate, and I don't know what default font they're using, but it's beautiful. And
it really is.
Yeah. It, you know, it's just a nice little IDE. Now, again, it's a Java IDE, which, you know, if you look at – I found this on Reddit. Mm-hmm. So caution to anybody who's going to go to Reddit. It's both hilarious and very offensive at the same time.
Depending on the links that are put up there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, the comments that people are making on this Reddit article is that, you know, a lot of people are not happy that it's running inside of JVM. So you, I mean, you can do Aptana or Eclipse development,
right?
Ruby development in Eclipse or NetBeans. Mm-hmm. It looks lightweight. It's the UI is nice, clean, and simple. You don't have many menu options, not many choices. Still, it's JVM, so you can't do anything in JVM without, you know, 128 megs or 256 megs. So
it's a lightweight Java-based Ruby API, Ruby IDE.
Yeah, and it, you know, who maybe it's going to be the successor to TextMate too. Who knows? It seems to be nice. Although it did. It did do the typical Java IDE thing on me twice today and just go out to lunch.
Garbage collect. You got to go.
It could just be that it's, you know, it's early.
Yeah. So you've been using it for a couple of days, though?
Yeah.
Hacking around with it?
Yeah. It's not bad. I like it.
Cool. Here's another one. 7 Reasons to Hate Your Code. I found this on DZone. It's a blog entry from a blog site called Yield Thought. And so... basically, one of the issues is people like to hold on to their code, and they get very, this is mine. I've written this, you know, a lot of high value from what I've done, as opposed to its output of what your thinking process was at the time. Refactor it, you know.
You have to think of it that way, because if you don't, you get depressed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You have
but
to.
But I
think
did all this work.
I know. Well, you know, this is what I was thinking a year ago.
Right.
That's why it doesn't look so good.
Exactly.
I'm different now. I'm better now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't take too much ownership.
Mm-hmm. So he has 7 different reasons. I love reason number 6. Gandhi would want you to. So he says, hate the user class, love the user. Mahatma Gandhi, lightly paraphrased. So anyway, that's a good little read, you know, kind of reflective read. We always like to throw a few of those into the show. There is one other, unit integration testing for GWT applications. This is an InfoQ article by Bertrand Paquet and Gail Lazari, looks like, on April 19th. First, they start by using test-driven development. So they write a test, and then they look at GWT test case, which is another base class, using interfaces for things, like a test utils framework. So it's kind of like going through all the different ways, if you're going with the GWT, of testing GWT applications. And it looked like it was pretty comprehensive. So
that's pretty cool.
All right. Well, we would take all of your time, but we wanted to keep these generally around 25 minutes or less, so we're at 24:50. So what's going on the TechCast is we're catching up with the ETE podcasts. We went through and categorized a whole bunch of them. We've got 4 that we're looking at putting out pretty soon, a couple of them in the Agile track. So you should be seeing some of those in the next couple of weeks. We have to get some just last-minute check-ins with the people who originally presented the material. And we have that coming up. We also have, actually, speaking of Eclipse, we have the Eclipse 4, E4 interview that I did a couple weeks ago. That's going to go up today. And we're going to have more interviews in the future, so keep listening. For more information about Chariot Solutions, hit chariotsolutions.com. For the subscribing to the TechCast, if you found us through Google search, it's techcast.chariotsolutions.com. And otherwise, we'll see you next week. I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And have a good week.